We'll begin on Daf Yud Daled Amud Beis. Seven lines before it spreads, before the first spread. You got the Vitepukle. What's that? All right, Vitepukle. Yeah. Before it spreads for the first time, it spreads twice. Before it spreads the first time. All right, Vitepukle. Last time we ended off with Rabbi Shimon ben Yochai explaining why Kriya Shema follows the order it follows. And he said because there are three functions being highlighted in Kriya Shema: learning Torah, teaching the Torah, and performing the Torah. And it follows that order. Shema V'ahavta talks about learning, teaching, and performing. V'ahaya talks about teaching and performing. Vayomer boils down to performing, and therefore it follows that order: learning, teaching, performing. So that's what's being highlighted in the order of Kriya Shema according to Rabbi Shimon ben Yochai. So now the Gemara asks, "V'tepu klei mide Rabbi Yeshua ben Korcha." Why do we need this explanation? Why don't we learn it from what Rabbi Yeshua ben Korcha explained? Rabbi Yeshua ben Korcha gave a different explanation in our Mishnah. Why wasn't that enough? We'll see momentarily what that explanation was. But why wasn't that enough? So the Gemara answers, it was. Rabbi Shimon ben Yochai, this is timely. Lag ba'omer. Rabbi Shimon ben Yochai is giving another explanation. There are two explanations. Chada, one explanation is as Rabbi Yeshua ben Korcha explained in the Mishnah. What was that? Kedei sheyikabel alav. He explained that this is the reason for the order. Kedei sheyikabel alav ol malchus shamayim tchila. Kriya Shema begins with accepting the basic reign of Hashem. Accepting Hashem as king. That's Shema v'ahavta. V'achal kach yikabel alav ol mitzvahs. The next step is v'haya. You commit to performing his mitzvahs in a more detailed way. I'm sorry? What's it? Well, first you acknowledge him as king. The next step is, it's two steps. Yeah, right, but that's already the next step. Before, first, like Hashem says, it's a medrash that says, first, declare that I'm king, afterwards we can talk about mitzvahs. But first you have to acknowledge that he's king. If you acknowledge him as king, he gives you his orders. The oid, and another reason is mishum de isba hanimileachanaisa, because of this other explanation Rabbi Shimon ben Yochai provided, that we go in the order of learning, teaching, performing. Now, yeah, I just want to note something that it's interesting. We understand that learning would come before teaching. We also understand that learning would come before performing. But why does teaching come before performing? Right? We seem to be putting the functions in a certain order, in a priority order, or an order of importance, I'm not sure. But it's learning, teaching, then performing. Wouldn't it be learning, performing, and teaching? So the truth is that yes, first of all, these three functions, Mamish, encapsulate the functions of the Jewish people. Learning, teaching, and performing. And in a sense, teaching is almost more important. I won't say more important. Almost more important than performing as a national function. Because, especially when we're talking in the days where Torah was all conveyed by heart. But even in our times, when you're talking about a culture, right? So you're talking about a culture that has its different things. So there are two things you want to be conveying to the next generation. First of all, you want them practicing the practices of the culture. But besides that, you want them to know the culture. You want to keep the culture alive. That might be even more important than any particular practice. So therefore, we have to realize that as Jews, a very central function, it's not like teaching education in general when you're want to teach children things. You want to teach them math. You want to teach them science. These are important skills for life, but it's not the essence of who they are. It's not the essence of who they are. Right? At the end of the day, someone can do just fine in life. Sure, education, technical education gives you an advantage. But a person can do just fine in life without education. A person can become a businessman. Now, you can't be a professional without education. Businessman, you need to have brains. You have brains, you can make a lot more money than people with education who struggle through their lives. So, therefore, education is not mamish an essential function. When it comes to Yiddishkeit, we're talking about conveying, Yiddishkeit is not just an issue of doing mitzvahs. So the kids grow up at home, and they do what they need to do. No, that's not enough. You're conveying a whole way of life. You're conveying a whole understanding of life. And this is something that has to be conveyed in a live way, from parent to child, from Rebbe to Talmud. When we're talking about keeping Judaism alive, that's a function of teaching. It's not a function of performing. Performing is more isolated. You do this mitzvah when it comes up, you do that mitzvah when it comes up. But as a national function, teaching is mamish essential. It's our job to keep Judaism alive by passing it on to the next generation. A very big part of who we are and identify ourselves is a link in a chain. As a link in a chain, we want to make sure that we are A, connecting to the previous link solidly, which is the function of learning. But we also want to make sure that we are solidly holding in place the next link. And that's the function of teaching. So as a national function, we might say that yes, teaching, especially the way the Gemara seems to be putting it here, is almost a higher priority than actual performance. It certainly doesn't mean don't perform. Performing is critical. But teaching is actually being put here first. Oh, that's right. It's not exactly. It's not religion. It's an absolute way of life. It's like what we're calling a culture. It's an absolute. It's everything about life. You're conveying this life to your children. You're not just conveying do's and don'ts to your children. You're conveying this life to your children. The whole mentality, the whole culture. Torah is a culture. Torah is not a subject, and it's not just do's and don'ts. Okay.
Performing is very much teaching also.
That's true. But the truth is that also, in a sense, but when it's being done in the context of teaching. Right? There's two different ways of approaching it. When a person is performing, just because he needs to perform, and he's performing because he wants his children to see it. Right? That's what I said, for example, it was a family of completely irreligious Jews, and God, exactly how it goes. But when they had their old grandfather living with them, and he died. When he died, the people from the Kehillah, they came, they went through his things, they found that this was a very, very big Talmud Chacham. And when they were looking through his farm, and they were looking through his writings, they saw that he was a very, very big Talmud Chacham. It was surprising that none of it carried over to his children. And they asked his kids about it. So they were growing up in the early years in America when Yiddishkeit was not doing so healthy. And this person, he was very committed, but basically used to lock himself in a room and dedicate himself to his studies. And he didn't do much over the table. There wasn't much that the children saw. He, in his room, was living the life of a Talmud Chacham, but it didn't carry over all that much. His kids didn't see much. He came out of his room and it was time for lunch. Ate his lunch, went back into his room. And yeah, he kept Torah and mitzvahs. Oh, sure, he was doing mitzvahs. But he was doing them in a very technical way, and he wasn't making a point of exposing his children to them. It's none of their abundance. What's that? I'm sorry? Possibly. No, I'm saying even when they were growing up as kids, but that's also possible. Right. So one of the Rabbanim who was seeing that, he said, this is a different understanding of the pasuk that says, הנסתרס להשם עליכנו והנגלויס לנו ולבנינו עד העולם נעשה שיש כל דברי התורה הזאת. זה פסוק אין ניצבים. It says, simple understanding of the pasuk is, the things that are hidden are for Hashem, and the things that are revealed are for us and our children to implement. Which simply understood is going on sins. Someone is doing a sin in private, Hashem deals with it. Someone is doing it in public, Bezdin has to get involved and punish. But this Rav said, but this person gave me a new insight into the pasuk. Whatever is done in concealment is between you and Hashem, but it's not going to go over to your children. Whatever is done in open is lanu uvaneinu, is for us and for our children. Don't hide your Yiddishkeit. Don't do Yiddishkeit behind closed doors. A big focus of your Yiddishkeit has to be to convey it further. You have to have that consciousness. There has to be a mindset. Okay. So on the contrary, you could also be putting a performing into a perspective. A performing should be approached in the framework of teaching. It should be part of the function of teaching. Okay. So Rav Moshe Feinstein also wrote about that period in America, back in the early days of Yiddishkeit in America, when it was very, very difficult. People were being... the way it worked was, a person who wanted to keep Shabbos had to find a new job every Sunday, Monday, whatever it was. They didn't count in it not coming to Shabbos. So Rav Moshe Feinstein wrote a tshuva at the time. He said, and besides that, in general, the youth, they weren't managing to hold on to the youth. People were falling off. It was very difficult to raise a Torah family. So Rav Moshe Feinstein said, from my observations, the people who, even though you have people who are very, very meticulous, they'll lose their job every week, and they'll keep Shabbos, but yet their children don't continue in their way. Why? So because often these people, yeah, he doesn't dare to be Mechal Shabbos, he don't keep Shabbos, but at home he's kvetching about it. At home he's kvetching about it. He talks about it as a famous coin expression from those periods. Shver Tzayin Ayid. It's hard to be a Jew. He comes home, he's fired again, he comes home with a long face, sits down. He's not even entertaining the possibility of going to work on Shabbos. He would never. But what he's giving up at home is how difficult it is. So what do you want from your kids? Those people who approach it as a privilege. Now this is not easy. You know, this is easier said than done. So I'm just quoting Reb Moshe. Those people who give across the fact that this is what we're excited about, we're happy with that, this is our privilege, their children continue. So basically, again, the idea is that even in your own performance, your performance has to be approached in the framework of teaching. How do I want to convey my performance to those who need to learn from me? Okay. We move on. Now, we're going to begin a new discussion which is going to connect back to our mission. Rav Moshe Yodei, his schedule was, he would wash his hands, mikara kriya shema, he would say kriya shema, it means with the brachas and everything, v'hanach tefillin, then he would put on tefillin, you know, after kriya shema, v'tzoli, and then he would daven. So the Gemara says, which comes out that he was saying kriya shema without tefillin on, he would put tefillin on after kriya shema. Gemara says, "V'heichi amidach." How could he do this? To say Kriyat Shema without tefillin? But Tanya says in the Braisa, "Hachoyfer kuch lemeis." If a person is busy digging a grave for a dead person, the kever, the grave, pato mikriyat Shema u'minatfilin, he is exempt basically from all mitzvahs at the time. Kriyat Shema, Tefillah, Tefillin, and we call mitzvahs Amuras Vatayra, and from all the other mitzvahs. This we're going to discuss more in the third paragraph. We won't get into this now, but we're just trying to get one point out of this. Higyazman Kriyat Shema, when the time for Kriyat Shema comes, Oile, he should come out of that grave, Venoitel Yadav, wash his hands, Umeniach Tefillin, put on tefillin, ve'kayre kriyashma, say kriyashma, u'mispalim, and daven. Okay, so before we get back to Rav, first we just want to work out this price. So the price started by saying he's exempt from everything. And when the time comes, he has to get up and do kriyashma and daven, which is self-contradictory. Ha gufe kasha. What we just stated is self-contradictory. Reisha oma patu. The beginning of this braisa said that he's exempt of all these things. The seifa, and then it continues and says, chayev. He has to do all these things. So the Gemara says, haloi kasha. It's not a contradiction. Seifa betray, the reisha bechad. If it's one person alone, he needs to prepare a grave for a body that's just lying here, he should just go straight through davening and skip davening. Takes precedence, yeah. Yeah. That has to be qualified, but that we're going to address later. What's that? Yeah. But if it's two people, where another person can continue, they're not just going to leave him lying there, he'll continue getting it ready, then you should get out and stop. What? I'm sorry? Yeah.
You want to get the guy around.
If they do it together, it'll be faster. Right. Right. So the point is not so much to get him buried as quickly as possible, as much as don't leave him lying like a klutz with nobody busy with him. Meaning that the coven, what's that? Right. But the point here is he's lying here. Let's deal with his case. No procrastinating, no bureaucracy. Right. But again, we'll see more. It'll be addressed in detail in the third parak. But that's the main point here: to leave him by himself. Everybody says, all right, Rabbi Yisrael, break now. Mr. Shachar's break, it's an important break. But that's considered a problem with the covenant. The problem with the covenant is not in the fact that he's lying there as long as people are attending to it. That's the idea here. Yeah, meaning the fact that staying a little longer, a little slower, we're not staying there with a whip. But people are busy with him, okay, his covenant is tended to. No. Tending to him means getting his grave ready. Meaning getting him ready for burial. Yeah. Okay. But again, it's not as simple as that. We'll see more in the third parak. But meanwhile, but for our purposes, mikol makom kasha l'rav. Whatever the case is, this presents a kasha for Rav. Rav said kriyat shema and then put on his tefillin. Here we're saying that the order should be first tefillin, then kriyat shema. So the Gemara answers, Rav Krav Yeshua ben Korcha Svirle. Here's where it ties back to our mission. Rav follows the approach of Rabbi Yeshua ben Korcha. The Omar, Rabbi Yeshua ben Korcha, said in our Mishnah, Oil Malchus Shamayim Tchila V'achaka Chol Mitzvahs. What is tefillin? Tefillin is performing a mitzvah, right? Now, in our Mishnah we said that first you accept Hashem's mastership, then you move on to performance. So therefore, first, say Kriya Shema, accept Hashem as king, then go on to do his mitzvahs. That's why Rav would first say Kriya Shema and then put on tefillin. So in other words, where we see it now, yes, Rav did this on principle. He believed that one should not put tefillin on until he says Kriya Shema. Meanwhile, yeah, you know, the order is first accept his kingship, then put on the tefillin. So the Gemara says, 1 minute, you're basing it on Rabbi Yeshua ben Korcha. Eimar da Omar Rabbi Yeshua ben Korcha la'akdim kriya li'kriya. Rabbi Yeshua ben Korcha said that when you're reading the parshias, the chronological order to read it is first Shema, accepting Hashem's rulership, and then performing the mitzvahs. But kriya la'asiyah misham islay. But did he say that you should first read it before you actually perform it? Meaning when you're discussing in a theoretical way, you talk about learning before performing. But when you're actually able to perform, We don't say, well, it's not really incumbent on me until I say Kriya Shema. No, it's like we said before, Na'aseh v'nishma. Consider yourself bound immediately. The Mishnah ben Korcha wouldn't say that you shouldn't put on tefillin until you've accepted Hashem's rulership. So that's number one. So this does not constitute a basis for Rav to put tefillin after Kriya Shema. Okay. V'so. But even besides that, if you do want to say this is justification, does he indeed hold that Kriya Shema ben Korcha that you should accept Malchus Shemayim before doing the mitzvah? The Omer Abchir Ba'ashi, Abchir Ba'ashi said, no, Rav's general practice was not like this. I was often in the presence of Rav. I saw the way he did things. Umakdim umashi yodeh. And he would first wash his hands, umevarech, and he would say Birkas HaTorah, umasni lampirkin, he would give us a shir, he used to give a shir before shachris, umanach tefillin, then he would put on tefillin, v'hodo kore Kriya Shema, and then he would say Kriya Shema. So, you see that he was busy performing before he said Kriya Shema. Rashi says the kash is not just on the tefillin here. He was busy learning Torah before Kriya Shema. He put on tefillin before Kriya Shema. If we're saying that Rabbi Shua ben Korcha meant the way he's supposed to actually implement it, you don't do any mitzvahs before you say Kriya Shema. Mechitema. So what will you say? No. Maybe he holds that that's right. Kriya Shema has to come first. Here, where he gave his shir and everything beforehand, Bidaloimotazman Kriya Shema was before the time for Kriya Shema had arrived. He had a shir at 3 in the morning. And he would give the shir until the time for Kriya Shema arrived. But once the time for Kriya Shema arrived, he would put Kriya Shema first. Maybe that's what he holds. So the Gemara says, if that's the case, in Kemayas Hadite de Rav Chiya Ba'ashi, if so, why was Rav Chiya Ba'ashi making a point of stressing this? Amarim didn't just schmooze. If Rav Chiya Ba'ashi was coming and recounting what he saw Rav do, that means that there was halachic significance to what he was recounting. So if he's just saying, well, early in the morning before Kriya Shema, Rav would give a shir, what's the halachic significance? Why does Rav Chiya need to be telling this? It must be that he's saying, no, even after the time for Kriya Shema came, Rav would first give a shir and put on tefillin, and only afterwards he would say Kriya Shema. So the Gemara says, no, maybe it was all before Kriya Shema. You want to know what the halachic significance of this is? Well, he told us that Rav would wash his hands, say Birkas HaTorah, and then give the shir. That's the halachic significance. We saw earlier an opinion that said that Mishnah does not warrant Birkas HaTorah. If you're learning Sukkim, you have to say Birkas HaTorah, but Mishnah not. So therefore we're stressing Kamash Malon, we're saying no, Rav didn't do that. Rav would say Birkas HaTorah and then he would teach us a shir, which involved Mishnah and Gemara. So Da'afla Mishnah Nami Tzorich Lebaret. So Rav Chiya is telling us, no, you see that Rav held that you say Birkas HaTorah for Mishnah as well. But it could be that as far as the other things go, the only reason he learned and put on tefillin before Kriya Shema was because the time had not yet arrived. But maybe he really does hold like Rabbi Yishua ben Korcha that reciting Kriya Shema should come before any performance of mitzvahs. So the Gemara says, Mikol Mokon Kashi L'Rav. But if we are maintaining this, that Rav holds that, yes, Kriya Shema comes before any performance of mitzvahs, again, we come back to the question. This Bryce had said that no, when a person is taking a break from digging a grave, he puts on tefillin and then says Kriya Shema. And as we showed him, Bishav and Kocha does not provide basis for acting contrary. So why did Rav recite Kriya Shema before putting on tefillin? So the Gemara answers, you know what, you're right. Rav agreed with everything that we're saying, and you're supposed to put on tefillin first. Why, in that case, did he recite Kriya Shema first? Shluko the obvious. It was simply a mishap. Someone was supposed to bring him his tefillin, but the guy came too late, the shliach came too late, so therefore he recited Kriyat Shema. I was afraid that the time for Kriyat Shema was going to pass. But certainly he agrees that in general, one should be wearing tefillin, put the tefillin on before Kriyat Shema, and recite Kriyat Shema with the tefillin on. So after the dust settles here, basically what we're saying is, no, nobody contests the idea that you should put on tefillin and then say Kriyat Shema. That incident with Rav that we made such a big deal about was really just a mishap. That's all. So you have to be careful when you learn from stories or things that were that great people were observed doing, requires the Talmud Chacham to be able to interpret it right. Today, people even write Sfarim based on things that they saw Gedolim doing. He writes Sfarim. Oh, he held this way, he held that way. Yeah, you see, yeah, it needs to be analyzed through the perspective of a well-versed Talmud Chacham. You can't pass an halacha in this way of seeing somebody do things and then, alright, you have it figured out. That's a famous story from Moshe Feinstein. That he was by one time, word got around, there's two big kosher milk companies, J&J and Golden Flow, right? The word got around that Rav Moshe Feinstein does not hold of J&J. Doesn't use it. And it was a rumor that was spreading in a serious way. It was causing damage. And somehow or the other, it got back to Rav Moshe that he doesn't hold of J&J. So Rav Moshe was like, when did I ever say such a thing? So they started trying to trace back where did it come from. And it came out that he was observed at a bris. He was at a bris. Both bottles of milk were on the table. He picked up a J&J. It was Golden Flow and J&J. He picked it up, looked at it for a minute, then put it down and took the Golden Flow. So Rav Moshe was thinking, why would I have done that? And then he said, that's right, the J&J bottle was closed, the Golden Flow was open. So that's inferring from what you see. What's that? Hey, empty. Oh. So you have to know how to analyze a story from a gadol. People are quick to base light, practices on stories that they heard. Has to be put through proper analysis also. The Stipler writes, there's a famous letter where the Stipler writes to somebody who had to come some practice because he read it in a biography that that's what this and this gadol used to do. The Stipler wrote to him, I don't understand how an intelligent person like you is basing practices on some story that somebody wrote that in most cases are misconstrued and not understood, and even when they are true, they're not portrayed in the right perspective. Take your practices from the real sources. Don't base them on stories. Stories we use for inspiration, they're good for that. Then it doesn't, also doesn't really matter if it's true or not. Okay. Fine. Omar Ula. So now that we've mentioned this idea, we'll nail it in. That yes, a person should be wearing tefillin when he recites Kriyat Shema. So Ula takes it a step further. Listen to this. Omar Ula. Kol HaKoyei Kriyat Shema B'loi Tefillin. If a person recites Kriyat Shema without tefillin, Ke'ilu made Edus Sheker Ba'atzmon. It's as though he's testifying falsely about himself. Meaning, if we'll just take this simply, he's a hypocrite. But he's testifying. He's here declaring all excitedly, oh, Hashem told us to wear tefillin. And where are your tefillin? Well, they're at home. And Rashi gives a little bit of a different take on this, a little bit of a scary take. Because Kilu made a sheker ba'atzma, it's as though he's testifying falsely about himself as a metaphor. It really means as though he's testifying falsely about Hashem. Meaning, he's coming and saying, Hashem said I should wear tefillin, but I don't believe it. I don't believe it's so important. Rashi is taking the magnitude of the sacrilege here further. He's turning it almost into apikorsis.
One of the legitimate reasons for not having tefillin.
Oh. What? Oh, very good. The truth is, that's why we saw that incident. We'll see. Good. Now, the Maharal says also further, he says, It's not just that you're saying, oh, Hashem said to put on tefillin and you don't have tefillin on, so you're hypocritical. So the whole essence of saying Shema and Galahavta is Kabbalah Asol Malchus Shemaim, right, is to be accepting Hashem as ruler. He said, wearing tefillin essentially is part of the fulfillment of Kabbalah Asol Malchus Shemaim. Tefillin is a sign that we are, it's like a brand, right? When you have the slaves were branded in the olden days. Right? This is a very different type of brand. It's a glorious brand. It's an ornament. It's a uniform. It's a glorious uniform. Whatever it is, it's a uniform. You identify yourself as Hashem's servant with your tefillin. So you're saying, oh, I'm accepting upon myself all Malchus Shemayim, but Lamaisa, you're not wearing the uniform. Right? You are not in His service. What do you mean you're in His service? Being in His service is manifested. Your connection with Him is manifested through your tefillin. So what do you mean? I'm saying, oh, I'm accepting upon myself His service. I think in the army, I understand that it's actually considered a crime not to be in uniform when you're supposed to be in service. It's a sacrilege. So to be saying, I'm accepting all Malchus Shemayim, but Lamaisa, you're not wearing the uniform, that's a sacrilege. Okay, now Omar Abichia Bar Abba, Omar Abi Yechanan, Abichia Bar Abba says in the name of Abi Yechanan, Ki ilo hikriv oilo beloy mincha, vezevach beloy nisokim. Saying Kriya Shema without tefillin is not doing the mitzvah right. It's the same as bringing an oilo without a mincha, or a korban without nisokim. Every korban is supposed to be accompanied by a mincha, right, a flower, a meal offering, and nisokim, wine and oil. So bringing a korban without that is not doing the mitzvah right. There also, he's saying even more than that. Before we said, okay, it's a sacrilege, but the mitzvah of Kriya Shema you fulfill. He's saying you did not do the mitzvah of Kriya Shema properly. Okay, so whatever it is, we're seeing that yes, tefillin is part and parcel of the mitzvah of Kriya Shema. It's your way of showing. It's your way of putting your money where your mouth is. I'm declaring that I'm accepting Hashem's rulership, and I am actually manifesting it by wearing Hashem's badge, wearing Hashem's uniform. That's what your tefillin are. Okay, so take it into the halachic perspective. This is being ruled upon halacha that it's considered very sacrilegious to just not wear tefillin when you're saying Kriya Shema. However, like you brought up before, what happens if a person doesn't have tefillin available? Should you skip Kriya Shema? So certainly not. That's what we saw in the Gemara before. Rav was waiting for someone to bring him his tefillin. When he got worried that the time was going to pass, he said Kriya Shema without tefillin. So certainly if you're worried that the time is going to pass, say Kriya Shema without tefillin. But if it's an issue you want to daven earlier, you know that you're going to get tefillin later, but it's going to mean davening later. Within the time, you should wait. Wait till you get tefillin and then daven.
Isn't it b'dievet to daven later?
What's that?
Isn't it b'dievet to daven later?
But it's b'dievet, even more b'dievet to daven to say Kriya Shema without tefillin. Even with a minion, the place can say. Better to daven. Better to daven by yourself with tefillin on than to daven with a minion without tefillin. Meaning, this could be relevant, let's say, you don't have tefillin for whatever it is, got lost on the plane. Okay, and you have to use somebody else's. There's only one minion now, he's davening at the minion, you want to use his tefillin. So you're wondering, is it better for me to daven at the minion and then put on his tefillin afterwards? Or, no, I'll put on his tefillin either beforehand or afterwards and I'll daven by myself. And the answer is that yes, better to daven by yourself with tefillin than to daven with the minion without. So therefore, when it comes to missing Zman Kriya Shema, that takes precedence to wearing tefillin with Kriya Shema. If you're going to miss it, say Kriya Shema first. But saying Kriya Shema with tefillin takes precedence to davening with the minion. Shlomo is asking if it's such a part and parcel of the mitzvah of Kriya Shema, what happens on Shabbos and Yom Tov? Okay, we'll get to that. Without. Meaning if you can daven now, No, the Zman takes precedence. Zman takes precedence to Tefillin. Tefillin takes precedence to a minyan. Okay? Now, what's with Shabbos and Yom Tov? So, what's that? Night is not a question, because night is a little different. Night is the Zman of Kriya Shema L'Maisa. The reason we don't wear Tefillin at night is because of a Gzeira. Chazal made a Gzeira not to wear Tefillin at night, because a person might fall asleep, whatever it is. That already, that's not a question. Chazal have that authority. But what about Shabbos and Yom Tov? So the answer is that, what are we saying? The whole point of Tefillin is because Tefillin really is what, the way it's termed is, Tefillin, Tefillin is the sign of your connection with Hashem. It's like we said before, it's the badge, right? It's the badge. And therefore, to come and say, oh, I consider myself Hashem's subject, but Lamaisa, you're not wearing the badge, is hypocritical. Shabbos and Yom Tov, the reason we don't wear tefillin on Shabbos and Yom Tov is because Shabbos and Yom Tov in and of themselves are an ois. Meaning, the essence of Shabbos is a badge, is a sign of connection between you and Klal Yisrael. The day itself is a connection between you and Hashem. And therefore we say tefillin is redundant on Shabbos. The very essence of the day does for you what the tefillin do for you. What's that? Why can't you do it? Once it's redundant, it's an issue of Baal Tos. You can put on tefillin on Shabbos, for example, if a person finds tefillin outside on the street. There's no Eruv. You put them on, you wear them home, intending not to do the mitzvah. But to wear tefillin because, why shouldn't I wear tefillin? It's a good thing to do. No, that's Baal Tos. That's a little different. I'll explain in a minute. What were you going to say? What's that? What's the idea of Shkodesh Musaf? Okay. So first of all, what's that? Well, it's really all the same discussion. So first of all, what's with the bris? Bris is different. A bris is different because a bris is making an ois, but really the ois, meaning the covenant. But again, what are we saying? Shabbos is a covenant. The point of the bris is, the tefillin is that it manifests the covenant between us and Hashem. Tefillin is like a badge, but it's more than that. Because for the Maharal, it's kind of like a live badge. It's kind of like, if we'll put it in these terms, a walkie-talkie badge. Meaning it's a badge that constitutes a live connection between you and Hashem. It's something alive. It's not just an ornament that shows. It's actually making that connection. Now you are a live, you know, how do you say it? Hooked up to Hashem. Shabbos is the same thing. Oisi also says the same thing in the pasuk. Oisi beniu beni Yisrael. Oisi loyelam. Shabbos inherently connects us to Hashem. Shabbos, you're connected to Hashem automatically. Bris is not necessarily connecting everybody around to Hashem. It's connecting the baby to Hashem, right? It's an ois for the baby. But we want to bring out the covenant even more by manifesting it as much as we can. It's not like it takes over the whole day and the whole scene. Right? We want to bring it out even more. We wear tefillin. Okay, as far as the Rosh Chodesh Musaf, so, well, the truth is it's kind of the same as Yom Tov. Just that Rosh Chodesh is more of a Yom Chol than Yom Tov, and therefore the day in and of itself is not necessarily an ois. When we're actually focused on the essence of Rosh Chodesh itself and the Tefillas Musaf, that already is definitely an ois. That's also what's kind of behind the whole machlokes about Chol HaMoed. Right? Is Chol HaMoed essentially an ois just like Yom Tov is? Or is it again just manifested in the Musaf?
The Dusha of the Musaf in the sixth time is the same as Shabbos Yom Tov.
What's that?
So
we Shabbos and Yom Tov.
Open it, not the whole thing.
Yeah, the Kesa, yeah. Okay. Fine.
So,
by the way, presumably, yes. Presumably. Okay. Just two other points we'll make. Also la'alocha, that in a situation where a person does not have tefillin available when he's davening, and he's starting to daven because otherwise he's going to miss the zmanim. So here also the halacha is that we've already touched on this earlier, but the halacha is that if you get tefillin in the middle of davening, you put them on with the bracha in the middle of davening, because again we're saying that it's mamish a critical part of what the davening is supposed to be. So therefore, yes, if you get tefillin in the middle of davening, you put them on with the bracha. Okay, we'll move on. Now, oh, I'm sorry, just one more point on this. Since we're saying the idea of making sure to avoid hypocrisy, right? Don't talk about Hashem commanding you to wear tefillin while you're not wearing it. So the Derech HaChaim, it's the Malbim on Or HaChaim. He says another point. If so, take into account when you're saying V'ahavta es Hashem Alekecha, you shall love Hashem, your God. Don't be a hypocrite either. Make sure to think for a minute before you go declaring it. You shall love Hashem your God. Think for a minute. 1 minute. Am I feeling that right now? Stop for a minute before you say V'ahavta and try to think. Oh, let me feel some love when I'm actually declaring it, so that you don't be a hypocrite there either. Okay, we'll move on. What? What's that? Sorry. Right. Meaning the point there is again that it's just a way of saying, the Mefarshim take it, that you did the mitzvah in an incomplete way. According to the Shita, actually, the Goyin says that there's a machlokes here between these two statements. According to this latter Shita, that says, though you bought a carbon without mincha and nisachim, that means that according to this opinion, you weren't yoytze Kriya Shema at all. You say Kriya Shema without filling, you're not yoytze. We don't pask in that way. We don't rule that way. We rule that you were yoytze, just see, it's a sacrilege. Okay. If a person wants to properly fulfill the concept of Ol Malchus Shamayim, of accepting Hashem's reign, so there's a little more process leading up to the actual Kriyat Shema. Yifne, go to the bathroom. See soon. That's an important part of preparing yourself for Kabbalas Ol Malchus Shamayim. Ve'itol yodov, wash your hands, also an important part. Ve'aniach tefillin, put on tefillin. Ve'ikra Kriya Shema, say Kriya Shema. Ve'ispalel, and then daven. Ve'zui Malchus Shamayim Shlema. That is the optimal way of accepting upon oneself Ol Malchus Shamayim. Now, in the morning. In the morning. This is the process. No. Here we're talking about when you're being mekabel Ol Malchus Shamayim. It's Shema. Shema in the morning. You start your day by being mekabel Ol Malchus Shamayim. This is the procedure. So there's significance here. This is not just technical. It's not, well, you're not supposed to daven when you have to go to the bathroom. Just go to the bathroom first. No. When we're approaching Hashem, we are making a point of preparing ourselves to approach Hashem. Meaning, we might even say, the person wakes up in the morning, he doesn't have to go to the bathroom. Right? Okay, you daven without having to go to the bathroom. You don't go to the bathroom if you don't have to go. Right? But actually, it's better to have to go if you have the choice. You don't have the choice. But it's not. But it's better to have to go to the bathroom and go to the bathroom. Going to the bathroom is a chush of a part of preparing yourself. Why? Because, well, in general, there's the concept that everything that you do, steps that you take to make yourself presentable, are a part of your avodas Hashem. What's that? They had other advantages.
It doesn't matter what you do ultimately. You have to go and do it with your buddies. Okay.
Yeah. Okay, that's halachically. But there actually is a maila to going to the bathroom. There's a mile to going to the bathroom. In fact, the Arizal says, what? That's halakhically. But the Arizal says that there's actual real significance to this. It's punished like a part of the process. Us with our tefillah is like bringing a carbon to Hashem. He shows how each of these things corresponds to the stages of bringing a carbon. This is just my guess. I'm just adding this. The Arizal doesn't spell this out. But we know, for example, that washing your hands in the morning corresponds to, we've discussed this in the past, corresponds to the Kohanim washing their hands before entering the Beis HaMikdash. So, what? Yeah, the Rashba. So, it's possible that the Arizal almost, he all but says this. What was the first thing done in the Beis HaMikdash was the Trumas Adeshen, clearing off the waste from yesterday's Avoida, and in order to get yourself ready for today's Avoida. So, it's possible that this corresponds to that. The Arizal almost all but says that, because he says these are all stages of preparing for the Akrovas HaKorban. This is the procedure of bringing a korban. And also, the Mefarshim take from this, they say that this is obviously representative of the fact that before a person approaches Hashem, he should make sure to clear out any garbage. So there's physical garbage, which you drop into the toilet. And then there's also spiritual garbage. The Meiri says, for example, if you have to clear your body out of the waste before putting tefillin on, you should certainly sit for a moment before putting on tefillin and make sure that your essence is also clear out of any waste. Think a little bit about tshuva. Right? Go through the previous day, see if there are things you have to regret, tshuva that you have to do in order to cleanse your soul also before you put those tefillin on. It's the Yerushalmi that says, this is something a bit astounding, that there were Amoraim. This really depends on how you learn in Yerushalmi. But this is how the Meiri understands it. That there were Amoraim who used to put tefillin on only a few days a year, when they felt that they were on the right level, spiritual. He used to put tefillin on a few days a year. Some Amoraim used to put on tefillin only in the Aseres Yemei Tshuva. There was another Amora that put on tefillin only after he was sick. Why? Because after he was sick, he felt that he had achieved the level of kapara that now he has a clean slate. So what would he do? Now that he really felt that he had a clean slate, he would put on tefillin for 3 days. That was how long he felt that his slate is still comfortably clean enough. He'll put on tefillin for 3 days, and then that was it. He already felt that he wasn't clean enough. Now that's the Meiri's understanding of this Yerushalmi. Other Rishonim understand the Yerushalmi differently. They don't understand it that way. They understand maybe it means that he wore it all day then, but this is how the Meiri understands it's Yerushalmi. We're certainly not going to take that la'alacha, but the lesson is clear that tefillin is something awesome, and you have to be in the right state to be doing it. So yeah, don't not put on tefillin because you're not in the right state, but spend that minute before putting it on to get yourself into the right state.
You have an obligation to put it on every day?
Not so clear. Taira says you have to wear tefillin. What does that mean? Rabbi Nechemiah is asking, how can you not fulfill the mitzvah of tefillin? So what does it mean? It says a person doesn't wear tefillin, that's Poshe Yisrael Begufan. It's a person who sinned inherently, a person who doesn't wear tefillin. Well, what does all that mean? Does that mean every day? It's not clear. The mitzvah of tefillin in the Torah is vague. It says you should wear it. Simply understood, really what it means is basically have it on all the time except the time that you can't. So what happens if a person can't most of his life? Right? Rabbeinu Yonah says that when it says that a person who doesn't wear tefillin is considered an inherent sinner, that means if he never wore tefillin in his life. This is it's subject for debate. Lamaisa, the Mishnah Berurah rules based on the Prima Gadim, who says that no, Lamaisa, the way we paskin it la'alacha is that yes, it's a chiyuv to put it on daily. That's the way we paskin it la'alacha. But again, this is one sheet of the Rishonim, right? This is certainly not the general understanding. One sheet of the Rishonim, how he understands the Yerushalmi. Okay? It certainly doesn't turn it into halacha la'maisa. First of all, it's the Yerushalmi. Babli doesn't say anything like that. And second of all, many other commentators understand Yerushalmi itself differently. Right? But la'maisa, the insight that we get out of it is relevant. That we do see. And la'maisa, that's the reason we don't wear it all day. Really, tefillin are meant to... The default situation is that a Jew has tefillin on. Tefillin used to be worn all day. It doesn't say anywhere. There's no source for wearing tefillin during davening. It's something that we do because we can't wear it all day, so at least we wear it during davening. But really, tefillin are meant to be worn all day. That's what they did in earlier times. Okay. I when I was a kid, I was very pious as a bacher. I was very pious. I read all these inspiring things about wearing tefillin all day. I was smarter than everybody else. None of my rabbeim did, but We're talking about me here. So I asked Rav Yoshu that why shouldn't I wear tefillin all day? He said, who said you could keep the halachas? Meaning, you have to be on top, you have to keep yourself clean, you can't fall asleep, etc., etc. I'm just confessing this just to get across a lesson here. He said, that was his style. He was very short and cryptic. He said, who said you could keep the halachas? I came away, again, I was very wise. I thought to myself, what's the big deal? You're not allowed to sleep. You're not allowed to do any bodily functions. And you can't make jokes in them. So, I was wise, but I was also humble. So therefore, I only wore the shalyat. One day I decided, I'm on a level, I wore only the shalyat. That day I fell asleep in the middle of Seder. As I learned my lesson. And since then, the tefillin I wore in chakras, other than that, they're safe in the bag. Okay. What's that? Because I was humble, I didn't want everybody to see how great I am. But so I kept the shalyat. What's that? Yeah. The way that the shalyat is acceptable. I wore it under my sleeve.